Welcome to the Nerd Party.
To listeners, this podcast was recorded just before the news came out that David Tennant and Catherine Tate would be reprising their roles as the Doctor and Donna Noble in 2023. While it remains to be seen what that will exactly look like, just know that this discussion of the future of Who does not include that aspect. Allons-y!
Welcome to Time and Space, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Jessica Nunn.
And I'm her husband and co-host, Philip Gilfus. Well, this is our podcast that we do, just like they release Doctor Who episodes. You never know when. You never know how. But we thought this is obviously a very special time, even though it's May 2022, but it's still special.
I assume you're talking about the Queen's Jubilee.
Exactly.
That's the special time.
But we're got news just a few days, week ago, about the 14th Doctor being officially cast and announced. So we're going to talk about that, as well as talking about the end of the Whittaker era. And to talk about all that, of course, is our friend of the show, Richard. Richard, welcome back.
Yay!
Thank you very much. Lovely to be back. Yeah, I haven't. I think the last podcast thing I did probably, I think, was with you guys. So I've had extended break as well.
Yeah.
So, Jessica, what'd you think about the announcement that Shuri Gatwa is the Doctor?
Yeah, I'm very intrigued. Obviously, I know him from Sex Education, but that's all I know him from. And then seeing him sort of do in-person things now obviously seems quite different from his character on there. So it'll be interesting. He's clearly an excellent actor, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with it.
And then, I don't know, I don't know about you, Richard, in your household, but I know, Jessica, you've watched Sex Education. So, I mean, what can you tell us a little bit more about what you've seen from him in that series, at least?
And it's a very broad character. It's got lots of layers and things like that, but he's a very sort of flamboyant character. So, yeah, it'll be, like I say, we'll see what he brings to the show and what he brings from that character, if anything, how much of that is him and how much of it's character and all of that. Do you watch Sex Education, Richard, or have you watched
it? No, a very similar situation. My wife, Lisa, has watched it all. When I'm up here pootling away on my computer and writing and things like that, she tends to catch up and all binge watch all the Netflix shows. So I was aware of the show, but I hadn't sort of seen it. All I know is that, funnily enough, this just goes to show people expect me to always have the finger on the pulse of Doctor Who. But I was actually en route to Tesco's, the supermarket, and it was your message, Philip, that told me, so there's a new Doctor. And I was like, right, is there? And quickly, I mean, you must have sent it within 10 minutes or so of it coming out. And I happened to be going to do the boring grocery shop. So I opened up Twitter and saw. And when I got home, after shopping, I came upstairs and my wife was working, as she is wont to do on a Sunday afternoon. And I said, they've announced the new Doctor. It's Shuri Gatwa. And she was just incredibly excited. She was, he's going to be absolutely amazing. He's so good in Sex Education. So, and obviously I then went in and looked him up. And I've taken the point that you mentioned there, Jessica, as well, as that when you see him interviewed, he doesn't appear to be an actor necessarily who... it's hard to say, doesn't play themselves. He seems more of a character actor. So, as to what he will be like as the Doctor, I think it's hard to tell. Obviously, with all actors, and certainly with a role like the Doctor, where it's an extended period of time that you're playing this character, I think inevitably actors have to put a bit of themselves into the character. But as to what that will be, I don't know. I think certainly he seems quite high energy. I think we're going to, and certainly with Russell T. Davis's previous work, we're going to have quite a high energy doctor, I think. Probably quite, I don't know, he might be less angsty maybe than the 10th Doctor. I think Russell T. Davis will probably feel that he's been there, he's done that kind of thing. And certainly a lot of what he's said, the little teasing comments that have come out have been that he's taking into new territory for him as a writer. So I don't think it'll just be a reprisal, perhaps, of the same kind of themes and style of the first Russell T. Davis era. I'm very optimistic. The only thing, and this is, I think it happens to us all eventually, is that now the Doctor, for the first time, is actually younger than myself. It's come close a couple of times. I think Matt Smith's only a couple of years older than me. Same with Jodie Whittaker, but this is the first time where he's definitively younger than me. And the first Doctor who was born and was a child during the revival era.
That's true.
He would have been about, he's 29 now.
Yeah.
So he would have, and my math's not very good, but he would have been probably about 10 years old or something when Christopher Eccleston was on. So he's a child now of the revival era. Never mind the doctors we've had who grew up with Tom Baker and Peter Davison, like Tennant and Capaldi and all that lot. Now we've got someone who watched David Tennant when he was a child, potentially. So, that makes me feel a little bit old. But it also just goes to show and underline, which I think is partly what the centenary special and the 60th anniversary special for Doctor Who that will come along next year, really underline how long this show has been around now. We're going to have to stop calling it, us old crusty fans will have to stop calling it New Who, because, it's not New Who anymore. You talk about Christopher Eccleston as being New Who, and, I think someone posted a very sobering statement, which was that the distance between Rose and now is longer than the distance between, the very first Doctor Who episode and Legopolis or something like that. There's an extended period now. And it is going on now. I mean, got used to these last couple of years of time just spinning past rapidly. And before you know it, 2 years are down. And it's not really that far away until it's the 20-year anniversary of the return of Doctor Who with Christopher Eccleston, which makes me feel a little bit old.
Yeah. Well, and it's been interesting because so many people have talked about, such a young person to play the Doctor. And I wonder if it's people like us who, when Matt Smith, who was younger than Schutte at the time, he was our age, so it wasn't that young. But now Schutte's so much younger than we are, and now we're like, oh, they're recruiting babies to play Doctor Who.
But I think it's worth remembering that he's not the youngest Doctor to ever been cast as.
Right.
I mean, he's the same age Peter Davison was when he was cast as the Doctor, and Matt Smith was younger when he was cast. So I think it all comes down to how he's going to play it, because ironically, both Davison and Matt Smith both played the Doctor as slightly older in personality. And I don't know if that came out. That was something that they were particularly looking for to offset how people might be uncomfortable with them being younger, or whether that sort of grew naturally out of the character. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Schutte Gatwa kind of inhabits that, age-old Time Lord. I think Whittaker's kind of paved the way in that regard, because her era has very much been sort of not being bogged down by the wearisome life of a Time Lord, because that was kind of done to death in a way through Tennant, and then particularly in Capaldi's era, that idea of being weary in some way. And so she's been much more youthful and energetic in that sense, and not kind of angsty. So it'll be interesting to see if they go for a bit of a contrast with that, with the 40th Doctor, or whether they maintain that. I think what's been really pleasing to see, I'm not really, I'm on social media because of my channel and everything, but I'm very much an observer. I don't tend to get engaged in debates. But one thing that was particularly noticeable, and despite the fact that a few people were like, what's this? It's just a Twitter announcement, you know. Mm. But it did seem to make a real impact, like, and the new audience, the interest in the show, just, I mean, it's typical Russell T. He knows what to do to, he's a master at, you know, picking up a new audience and getting people talking. And, you know, apart from the usual bigots, which fortunately have been quite small, or maybe that's just because I ignore them all now. Everyone seems to have been really, really excited. So, you know, it's clearly a kind of a masterstroke of casting. But from what they've said, it seems a little bit serendipitous to them as well, because apparently they auditioned many. They already had someone who auditioned that they were pretty sure that was going to be who they cast. And Shooty was the last one who came in and blew them away so much. They said, no, it's got to be him. So I think it'll be interesting, you know, down the line to find out who was that.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Other doctor as well, and whether it was a woman perhaps, because that was the one thing at first I was sort of surprised, because I thought it almost certainly would have been another female doctor, and I was a little bit disappointed because I'd like to see how another female actress done it. But I think the significance of the casting of Shooty Gatwa as well it doesn't, because I was worried that if they cast a man, that then all these sort of not my doctor kind of people would go, well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's why it didn't work. It was a failed experiment. We'll never have a female doctor again. And I don't want those people to have any kind of assumption that they were right, because they clearly weren't. But I think the casting of that actor has not really... it's not given those people an acknowledgement in some way. It seems to have sidestepped that, which is fortunate. Maybe that's because he's a person of color. Maybe it's because, you know, he's young. I don't know. It's much, you know, he seems a lot younger than any of the others, probably because he's known for playing. I mean, I haven't seen Sex Education, but I imagine they're all supposed to probably be in their late teens, the characters.
Yeah, sixth form, yeah.
So people have got that idea that, you know, he's much, much younger than perhaps he is.
Yeah.
He certainly comes across as slightly more mature isn't the right word, but a little bit more perhaps wiser than the character he plays in Sex Education when I've seen him in interviews. So
yes, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I'm excited for it though. I think it'll be really, really interesting to see. And a few people, you know, who are trying to come up with any excuse to sort of bombard things, saying, well, how's he going to travel in history if he's back? And I'm saying, well, no, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
For the same reason that one of the things I really like about the Witchfinders in Whittaker's era is that she gets put on trial because she's a witch. Other doctors wouldn't necessarily have experienced that kind of discrimination, but because she's a woman, she does.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a real opportunity there. And in a way, I think to make up a little bit for the fact that I feel that Russell T. Davis he shied away a little bit in his historical stories from really contextualizing them. I mean, there is a lot to be said that historical stories or our understanding of history can be, you know, history isn't necessarily what really happened, is what people wrote down. So everyone thinks that everyone was white and there wasn't any... ethnicity, a range of ethnicities until like the 1960s in London. But of course, in reality, that's not true. But sometimes I do think, like in the Shakespeare Code, for example, where there's kind of a token mention of the fact that Martha's black, she's like, and he's like, oh, you'll be fine. And it's kind of like, well, you know, perhaps there are opportunities to explore those kinds of issues and those ideas without kind of ignoring it and making people in history like they are nowadays. You know, people don't have the same attitude. So I think that's one of the reasons why Rosa is so praised, in that it does actually confront that, albeit the whole story is about that. It doesn't have to be, you know, all about a big weighty issue like that to have, you know. There was a little bit of that in Capaldi's time, I felt, with Bill when they went to the Frost Fair and things like that. But yeah.
But yeah, Rosa in particular, because it dealt with Ryan's experience as well as
Yaz as well. They had that conversation.
Experience. Well, and I think when Yaz didn't know where to sit because she wasn't black.
Well, I think when Ryan gets slapped in that episode, like that, like everyone just stops.
Yeah.
You know, that is like, this is what we're doing. This is the life. And so like, that's not going to happen with a white companion and a white doctor.
When no, exactly. And I hope that there is some acknowledgement of that because, you know, it's a fine line. You want the doctor to be recognized by everyone as the doctor and not different significantly, but you know, I think there's opportunities for good writers to explore aspects that the show hasn't really been able to do before. So I hope and I expect Russell T. Davis will do, because I think his sort of political views and allegory in the first era of his, I think, were a little more subtle than perhaps he as a writer will be now. I'm not saying he'll necessarily get on a soapbox, but I feel, judging by his last few projects, I think he's more keen to perhaps make statements with what he's writing, explore things a bit more.
Or so, at the very least, not brush them under the carpet.
And this is terrible, but I was just Googling because I was like, well, I don't know the answer. And again, not that it matters, but I checked it anyway. So think of me what you will. Obviously in Sex Education, with Shudi playing such an out gay character, and then given Russell Davis's recent, well, him himself, but his recent projects as well, with It's a Sin and others. And given, his a comment, it's always thrown around now where he's saying, I think I'm paraphrasing, only gay actors should play gay characters. And so I Googled, because I was like, so is Shudi gay? And the web basically says he doesn't. He hasn't said one way or the other. So, and I'm not going to, get into his private life.
Yeah, I wondered about that as well, because a lot of people were saying, this is a big thing. We've got a queer actor playing the Doctor. But I didn't, other than the character that he's, I believe the character he plays in Sex Education is gay, isn't he? Mm. But other than that, I didn't see any necessary confirmation of that, like you've said. I think from the point of view of having the character be romantic, if you will, or sexual,
and I'm looking at
it's interesting, isn't it?
Because one era,
well, you've got Tennant, and obviously Eccleston's Doctor was going that way. That was obviously a development that was going through that sort of Tennant's Doctor picked up, and you've then got him. I think as a response to the fact that a lot of people fancied that the incarnation of the Doctor, the audience, that is, they kind of played into that a bit. I suppose you could say Matt Smith was a kind of a romantic because he had the relationship with River. Although personally, and this might be something that I look at some point, I never felt it really rang true sometimes, because one minute he was really awkward and then the next minute he was very suave. I think it worked better with that one episode with Capaldi and River. There was a sense there of love rather than sort of coquettish sexy jokes like you got with the Smith incarnation. But then
I was going to say Matt Smith was more romantic with a capital R, this coquettish sort of platonic idea almost.
Absolutely, and obviously he had I think the word used was vivacious or feisty all the time to describe Amy Pond coming on to him and everything, and he sort of backed away from that. I think Moffat later said that he regretted
that scene
slightly, the way that he wrote the end of Time of Angels, where she's sort of basically assaulting him. But anyway, then of course you've got the almost too late nature of the Yaz and 13th Doctor relationship, which I think will be really interesting to see in this upcoming special. So I think what I'm thinking about here is, would you then have the 14th Doctor immediately develop a romantic attachment to a companion? And maybe I'm making the mistake as someone who's watched all of Doctor Who and sees this as one big story. Of course, Russell T. Davis, although he's very aware of the previous era, I think this new series will likely be a kind of a soft reboot akin to the Christopher Eccleston first season in order to appeal to a wider audience and sort of remarket it, you know. Mm. So maybe, and Russell T. Davis does tend to, one of his big things as a writer is exploring interpersonal relationships, romantic relationships between the leads and characters. So I think it would surprise me if he didn't at some point, you know, choose to sort of write, go into that territory in some way. But I think as a viewer long-term of Who, I'm kind of, I'd like the Doctor not necessarily to be asexual again, but a little bit less, a little less of the romance, with the long-term romance aspects. I prefer more, like you say, the platonic love that he has for his companions. But
I think it's, you know, episodic versus inside the TARDIS. You know, there can be a fling on an episode, and you know,
like with Elizabeth or Marilyn Monroe,
like Girl in the Fireplace. You know, that's a very, I mean, I you know, whether you like it or not, I think that's a very, you know, romance for the Doctor.
It's sort of contained, isn't it? Within there. Yeah, it's explored. It doesn't have to be this ongoing, you know, I love you. I think the reason why I'd rather not have that, maybe it's because I'm not very imaginative, but I feel that the story can always only end one way. Mm-hmm. And we had that with Rose.
Martha, to an extent.
But, yeah, to some extent, yeah. You know, and we had that with trying to think now.
But and then
we're
Donna
going was, to obviously have it with Yaz, aren't we? Mm-hmm.
But Donna's sort of the anti-companion, or, you know, anti-reaction companion. You're like, we're staying up front that this isn't a romantic relationship, you know.
Yeah. And then she snogs him, but, you know.
But, yeah. So, yeah. And so in the Davis 2 era, I guess if that's what we're going to call it.
I think people are calling it RTD2 at the moment. That's the common, the craze for it.
So, I wonder what you think. I mean, is, you know, in his headspace, because you're saying, you know, you were thinking like, you know, it's like a soft reboot. Is he rebooting himself? Like, you know, is he, you know, and I think we can all acknowledge that he said he's grown as a writer. He's not going to be the same as he was in, you know, 2005 and all. But like, you know, is he like rewatching himself, or does he just like take what he did before and it's all to the side and...
Mm.
How will Davis?
Hard to say, because he's always a surprising writer, isn't he?
Yes, you
know, he has a definite style, but every time he does a project, it's always like throwing a big rock into a placid lake or something, and the ripples go out. You know, when he did Years and Years, when he did It's a Sin, it's always been recognisably Davis, but it's always made a big splash. And you know, I think he wouldn't want to just redo what he's done before. I think there's a different objective in a way than before.
And in some ways, isn't the, for lack of that as an American expression, aren't the safeties off? I mean, because, you know, in Davis 1, you know, he had to be, I'm restarting Doctor Who. I don't know if this will even last a few months, last a year.
I got to be careful.
Whereas this one, like, and I don't know what happened. And maybe, you know, whenever you do your video years from now, you'll, but like, I assume they came to him. I don't think he came to them, you know. But he's Russell T. Davis, he's a much more stock, I guess. And not that he didn't have it before. And so, you know, he has a lot more freedom, I guess, is what I'm saying about.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he was quite proven when he did his first stint at Doctor Who. But I think that really cemented his status internationally, really. And yeah, now he's going to be, I think, far more in control, perhaps creatively. I mean, he had the benefit before that no one really believed that it would work as such, you know, apart from the key players. And it did really change the TV landscape, I think, certainly in this country. It proved that, you know, Saturday night, which TV studios had given up on for making, you know, family programming, it proved that still existed. There was still a market there. It'd be interesting to see how this new era might affect TV, because there's obviously a completely different landscape now with streaming, with, you know, people not watching television live that often. I mean, it's quite funny because people, you know, as usual, they cherry pick what they want to try and prove their points, and they leave out important context when you see, oh no, Doctor Who only got 4 million viewers.
I know.
But then you look at the show that like everyone's talking about, and it's a massive success, and everyone, you know, it's proper like water cooler stuff, and that got 5 million viewers as well. And you think, well, why is one that? And it's because they're comparing it with itself all the time. Mm. Doctor Who's always compared with itself, and it's compared with different contexts.
And then it just kills me. I mean, not that I'm obviously a media person, but like, and we'll talk about it here in a second, but like, you know, in Sea Devils, and it's like, overnights, you know, where I'm exaggerating, but are terrible, the lowest ever. And I'm like, hold on. I know I watched it on streaming, just because like we weren't on time. So like I watched it an hour later and I'm like, can we just wait? Like it may very well be the lowest for all I know, but can we just wait till we get the other numbers? But it was like all the headlines. I'm like, guys, just wait. And then of course, 3 days later, it's like, all right, it wasn't as bad. I'm like, okay, it's 2022. We knew this was going to happen. Like I could get this was 5 years ago. We said that, but like, guys, we know how it works. So I'm just like,
but you've always got to place any kind of thing like that in the context that's relevant. And if you look at other programs and stuff, then yeah, there's programs that get more viewers live than Doctor Who does currently. But, you know, if you look at it in the context, it's still in, you know, the top 20 or the top 10 in certain days and things like that. And you know, it's, for those of us, if, you know, if people are genuinely concerned about the thing, I mean, obviously with the, with the new era, with Bad Wolf Productions coming in and doing it, you know, that's all going to change anyway. So you just see the kind of response that the casting of Shuti Gatwa has had. And that was, as far as I could see, the BBC basically just announced it on Twitter. You know, they didn't need a big campaign and a big special show that's cringeworthy, you know. I remember when Matt Smith was announced, and it was like an hour-long episode of Doctor Who Confidential, and it was basically everyone skirting around the issue for a final shot of Matt Smith at the end, and everyone went, who's that? But now, to just get an idea of the interest that's there and the interest in this new era in particular, they just put a picture up of Shuti Gatwa and say he's the 14th Doctor with no extended, you know, they did do interviews and stuff following that, obviously, in the red carpet and stuff, but just that thing was enough to set the general public talking about it. People are asking me, you know, that wouldn't, I would have thought, oh, all the Doctor Who fans that I know will know this because they followed it. All the people that are really into social media may have come across it. But I had people who I wouldn't have thought would eat, they're not on Twitter, they heard about it, and they just said, oh, what do you think of the new Doctor then, to me, you know, asking my opinion. And you know, I just thought, well, how do you know that? It was so, you assumed it was so small scale. But I think that's a good measure of how much interest there is in this new era and how it's going to go. From a creative point of view of Russell T. Davis, I think we also have to bear in mind that the context of production is going to be different as well, because it's,
he's run out essentially of places in Wales to shoot.
Well, I mean, there's lots of speculation. Obviously, Bad Wolf is a big studio company, up and coming, and allegedly I heard the other day that a studio they work with or something has just acquired essentially the you know, the big live screens that they use for like Mandalorian and things like that. Apparently there's, I can't remember what it's called now, but apparently the studio that they're most likely filming the new Doctor Who will have that,
almost like Ted Lasso
access to that. So it's kind of like, use it, what do you call it in a theater, the
scrim,
yeah, sort of a curved background. But what it is, instead of using green screen, is essentially rear projection, but it's a CG animated environment that's linked to the camera. So when you move the camera around the actor, the background shifts to accommodate. And you know, it really took the world by storm when we realized that the Mandalorian was all shot almost exclusively using this thing. They never went out on location anywhere. So, you know, I hope they do still do a lot of location stuff, but I think the possibilities are open. And I mean, I was really pleased and impressed by the level of the special effects, for example, in Flux. I think, you know, it's just miles ahead of what they could achieve before. So the reason why I'm saying this is that, as always, it's how can that service the story? And I think it makes the palette that Russell T. Davis has to sort of paint on now, the canvas, a lot wider. He can create much more interesting things that perhaps he wouldn't have been able to do before because of the technology and the money that was available in the mid-2000s.
Now the farting green aliens are going to look even cooler.
All right, well, Jessica, any final thoughts about Shooty and Russell and what's to come next year?
I mean, I'm looking forward to it all. What's the time scale? Do we know?
Well, I mean, you know as much as we know theoretically when the last Whitaker is going to be this year. But next year, I mean, it's just cagey. 2023 is all I've gotten. Are we going to be waiting all the way until Christmas, Richard? Or are we doing Christmas again? You know, what are we doing?
I don't quite know. No one really knows. I mean, there's a lot of rumor. There's a lot of assumption. And people have looked at different people's filming schedules. I think Shooty Gatwell will be filming another series of Sex Education before he sort of takes on the role. It all depends. It's up in the air, really, about how the centenary special is going to go. Is it going to be a new Doctor, or is it going to be some sort of unusual look at it? People are saying about having past Doctors, and because there's always the David Tennant's going to be back. People are really clinging desperately onto that notion. what might be interesting might be to have like a, I don't think this is necessarily likely, but it might be interesting to have an anniversary special which doesn't actually feature the new incarnation of the Doctor, but has previous incarnations sort of working together, and then the new Doctor is unveiled at the end. I don't know if that would be a good idea or not, but I think it might be an interesting way to sort of turn it on its head a little bit. You know,
I think Day of the Doctor, during the 50th anniversary. So,
well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, indeed. So whether at the end of this centenary special we'll see the new Doctor, or you know, we'll have that. I mean, people are saying, well, we know that Whitaker filmed her last scene, and they took apart all the TARDIS, and we're pretty sure then that Shooty Gatwell wasn't cast then. But that's so, you know, will she regenerate in the TARDIS? Will she regenerate? I'm thinking with modern technology, it's very easy to have her regenerate into him and just shoot his stuff on a green screen. You could do that relatively easily with decent, you know, not if you don't have him interacting too much with the environment or whatever. But it's not the first time. I mean,
Jodie and Eccleston,
Tennant wasn't on stage when Eccleston regenerated. They filmed that at a later date. I think Matt Smith and David Tennant were. There was another one I know where there was a gap between it.
Well, Peter and Jodie.
Yeah, that was filmed at a different day, wasn't it? Yeah. And it seems like the major sticking point for people is that they've dismantled the set. I'm thinking, well, that's not really a sticking point. I mean, they could do it numerous ways. I think I'm open to be surprised because you just don't know necessarily what Russell T. Davis will want to do. I mean, if it was Moffat, I'd be 100% sure that we'd see a physical regeneration from one into the other in camera. Because, you know, I think that the fanboy itch in him was why he went back and made sure that you saw Paul McGann regenerate, and you even started to see John Hurt regenerate and all those kinds of things. So who knows really how it's going to go along, where we won't see him properly for that time. I think the anniversary special, the way it's all been phrased, that the anniversary special will come and then there'll be a series.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, it doesn't make sense to show the anniversary special any earlier than November. So
maybe
we might potentially
special,
be waiting that
Christmas
long,
special,
you know?
And then...
It might be like that they do an anniversary and then they start series 14. Is it 14?
I don't even remember now.
They start that like in the new year, a bit like they did with the last the series just before Flux with Jodie Whittaker, where they started the series on New Year's Day and then it ran forward from there. I mean, that might be, but who knows, really? It's exciting, though.
Yeah.
Are they going to have to reshoot all the stuff over the Doctor Who Experience?
Yeah.
Which we finally went to the other couple of weeks ago. So,
The time fracture.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I have to take it down for a week and refilm. Yeah. So moving on, or at least moving backwards, I guess, as it is. So let's go. You know, we are in as I think Russell T. Davis said, there can only be one Doctor, and that one Doctor right now is the 13th Doctor. So we had Legend of the Sea Devils, if I'm saying that title correct, the other month, and then we'll have the, as we've talked about, special here in September ? About, you know, Jodie's last go. So, Jessica, what do you think of what we saw with Sea Devils and where the heck Aruni we're going to be going for one quick fix everything story?
Yeah, I liked Sea Devils. Okay. I didn't like it as much as you did, I think. And I'm struggling at the moment to remember why, but give me a minute. Again, it feels like they tried to do a lot in a little.
Because I guess what I liked about it is, and I don't know if I'm grading on a curve, is that unlike a lot of Chibnall stuff, there weren't that many guest stars taking over. Like I thought with the New Year's, I was going to say the New Year's Dalek one, that doesn't narrow it down, I know, with Chibnall. But the recent one where you just had the two guest stars, basically, and the Daleks. And so I thought it was a little more restrained. And, you know, it's almost a, what do they call it? Bottle episode. Like it was just shooting in these four rooms, you know, basically. So, I mean, which is, I thought that was an interesting concept with the timeline, but we'll get into that. But with Sea Devils, you know, we had the, I forgot everyone's name, so I apologize. The Lady Pirate, that's not her name, which took Dan and took the other character. So we did have two guests there. But then the other part of the gang, Yaz and the Doctor, were sort of, you know, you had the bad guy and all that, but it was sort of over there. So, but that was it. There weren't like 50 guest stars like there usually are in Chibnall. And so to me, that was a little, you know, a little bit more restrained, but, it was fun, you know, nothing, neither good nor bad, but then introducing at the end about the, as Richard, you were saying with the Doctor and yes, I'm like, there's one episode. Yeah. Oh my, you guys are not going to land this train in you know, 90 minutes. Maybe you are.
I don't think you have to land a train, but yeah, the metaphor's
same. Yeah, I think I'm similar. I thought Eve of the Daleks was really, really good. I really enjoyed that. And especially after, I mean, I liked Flux. I even kind of, you know, the ending, a lot of people felt, as they do a lot of the time these days with shows, that the ending kind of retroactively ruined the what had led up to it. I didn't feel that. I kind of enjoyed it. But obviously it's a victim of its own ambition. You know, there's too many characters. There's too many guest characters that aren't served. There's a lot of plot threads that aren't really resolved and won't be resolved. But it was a great achievement considering the circumstances under which it's made. And I think it's worth remembering that both Eve of the Daleks and Legend of the Sea Devils and the forthcoming Centenary Special were also made under those circumstances and those restrictions. But I felt with Legend of the Sea Devils, it was obviously very exciting, especially for someone of my vintage with Doctor Who, to see the Sea Devils come back and for them to look so great. You know, they look like Doctor Who monsters. I'm sure if you'd never seen Doctor Who, you're like, what's this silliness? You know, they'd updated them, but you can't disguise the fact that that costume is a 70s monster costume. You know, the guy's head is clearly in the neck and all that kind of thing. But it was just glorious. I think one of the benefits is that things like maybe the Marvel movies have come along and shown that you can do silly and audiences will still like it. And I think that's of a benefit because I was perhaps unfairly, but very disappointed by the Silurians being redesigned in another Chris Chibnall story. And I understand why they did that. They made them look more human, more mammalian than they had been originally. It was great. The design is always... In this era, I think it's been amazing costume design and things like that. I think that Legend of the Sea Devils was a victim somewhat of the fact that because we don't get as much Doctor Who now, and when it's a special that comes out, you're like, well, I put all my expectations on this. There's a lot that it's got to get through, and it's built up, but it's supposed to be a romp, you know. And I think it fulfills that to the extent that, you know, the best romps, you're not really supposed to think too much about them. You just go along for the journey. You know, there's a lot of MacGuffins in a romp, and this certainly fulfills that, because there's a lot of illogical things that happen. You're like, why? Like, why does the Sea Devil suddenly somehow jump and levitate onto his ship? Like, they've never proven to be done that before. Like, why is that? There was a bit of convoluted stuff about time travel, which I don't think necessarily was pulled off. For boring, sad fans like myself, I think the missed opportunity of having the sea monster be the Murker, which in Warriors of the Deep was the thing in the 90s that was always dragged out to say how crap Doctor Who was. Look at this. It was a pantomime horse with two people walking over polystyrene walls that the Sea Devils controlled. And so when the trailer for Legend of the Sea Devils came out, it was, look at this enormous monster that's under the sea. That's definitely going to be the Murker. And we're going to show all those, you know, cynical people in the 90s who mocked us that this is what we can do now. And then it turns out not to be the Murker. We're like, oh, well, that's a missed opportunity. It didn't really matter. It's probably, I don't know, maybe I haven't always been paying attention in the past, but most of the time I can accept when there's like a little bit, you're like, that doesn't quite make sense. But both myself and my wife are watching, and obviously Yaz and the 13th Doctor are under the water, and they have that lovely bit, and then the ground falls away, and then the monster bites the TARDIS, and you get that trailer shot. And then they're inside somewhere. They're inside the base. And my wife said, how did they get there? And I was like automatically in defensive mode. I was like, well, the Doctor clearly dematerialized, ended up there, or maybe deposited the TARDIS. But thinking about it, there's clearly something missing there. They're on their side in a base. Like, how did they get there? I must point out, I've only seen it the once at the moment, so maybe there's things I've missed. But other people appeared to have issues with that as well. Mm. And it did seem a little bit, I think it was the editing of things. It was the way it was edited together. Maybe it was intended to be longer and had to be chopped down because for a special, the running time seemed quite short. I would have, if it had another 15 minutes to breathe, I think some of the little inconsistencies could have been tied up. But I don't know the production context that create that, which is why I'm very excited for a 90-minute special. What I hope that Chris Chibnall does with that centenary special is that he doesn't use, he think, well, I've got, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes longer, I'll stick in another five plot threads.
Well, I can characters. Add 10 more guest stars. Know.
Now that we're getting to it, I'm sure the teaser excited a lot of people, and there are reasons to be excited, but, and again, I don't want to be that Chibnall sucks because I don't want to, but when I see the teaser and like the master's coming back, I don't even remember all the ones, like five people are coming back. I'm like, oh God, this is going to be the night of 50 guest stars again, isn't it? I mean, like, we need a story that says goodbye to the 13th Doctor, somehow gets rid of these companions in a nice way because I'm sure they're not coming along. And I'm like, I can't do 50 guest stars.
Obviously, we've got the Doctor, Yaz, and Dan. Which is, you know, a good team.
Well, and I assume Graham.
The problem is Dan's never really been. I certainly expect Graham to show up and speak to Dan, mainly because one time I saw a photograph of what appeared to be them filming the centenary special around the time that someone, you know, how Chibnall is so guarded with secrets, and then someone on the production team just walked out with a box that had Master written on it, and it's like everyone then knew the Master was going to be in the finale. It was around that time I saw a photograph of Bradley Walsh on set with John Bishop. So I think it's most likely that he's gonna show up, probably as part of Dan's farewell or something. Whether he'll have an extended role in it, I don't know. Obviously, you're going to have the subplot of Ace and Tegan.
I forgot, yes, of course.
And then you've got, but you've also got to bear in mind that, because I turned to my wife and I just, because I was one of those very, I hesitate to use the word squee because it makes me feel slightly uncomfortable, but I was very excited when I saw Ace and Tegan.
Yeah.
And I think it's just so amazing to come full circle there, because Janet Fielding was someone who, for one reason or another, for a very long time, kind of, maybe I'm being unfair, but she kind of seemed to disown Doctor Who a little bit. And she sort of came back round to it with Big Finish and when the new series started. And now she seems a big part. She, you know, she's on all the Blu-rays and watching Doctor Who and things like that. She has a healthy dose of cynicism towards herself. But, you know, to see her come back and to have, obviously, Ace, because I know that that was what they were kind of intending. They were definitely intending for Sophie Aldred to have a guest part in the Sarah Jane Adventures, which obviously didn't come about. So it was nice to see her, those two. But I did say to my wife, how on earth did they pull that off? Like, surely someone would have seen them. And she said, well, maybe they're only in it like a little bit. It's just a tiny cameo kind of thing. They're in one room. And, you know, there is that possibility that it's kind of...
Why would your wife be so mean?
I think it's because she doesn't like to get her hopes up.
Yeah. Yep. Managing
and have them dashed.
Yeah.
But I know also that Kate Stewart's going to be in it, I believe, as well.
Oh, that's true. Nice, again, nice. This is where, I mean, like, you know, I don't want to be like, ugh, but like, it all sounds cool, but I'm like, God, this is it. Like, we're saying goodbye to the, oh boy, this is going to be busy. It's going to be busy.
But at the same
time, you know, with 90 minutes, there might be enough to satisfactorily, you know, do that. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm not saying, I believe that it'll be fine, but I'm not saying I think, oh, he's not going to pull it off, because I'm always optimistic about it. And I do think that Chibnall can pull it off sometimes, you know, and really get it. Like all the showrunners, that finale is always a difficult one to do, because expectations are high, and especially if it's a regeneration story as well, everyone has a certain expectation of it. I always felt, and I kind of intimated this a bit in my last video about the Tennant era, that I felt that Russell T. Davis sometimes built it up so much, he created a check so big, he couldn't quite cash it in the finale, and I preferred the earlier parts of those seasons. But we'll see, really. I think, you know, there probably will be some element of, you know, press the button and we reset everything, but that's not a failing of Chibnall, that's kind of de rigueur for a lot of Doctor Who. I think as long as the story, I think the real heart of it is the 13th Doctor and Yaz and how that relationship is going to be resolved. So I think Chibnall sometimes has an issue with prioritizing what is the most important part in this story, what is this story really about, and really zeroing in.
He's a spectacle.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. So, although I got to be honest, I think John Bishop with Shooty would be a really interesting combination.
Definitely.
This goes against
that would be
eating a white man.
It does go completely against my older white man, but I could just see John Bishop just being like,
oh, so you're not the doctor.
That was good, babe. Well done. You've been watching those Beatles documentaries again, haven't you?
But so, Jessica, I'm curious what you think, because, you know, as you're saying, you know, with all the endings, and as I'm looking back, and this is my opinion, obviously, I think 10 and 11's finals was like, I mean, the endings, I thought the actual ending, like the last 2 minutes were all good. But End of Time, I'm like, yeah, it was all right. And then the 11th Doctor's Day of the Doctor. Well, no, whatever.
Time of the Doctor.
Time of the Doctor was meh. no, I loved the Capaldi Christmas special, but that was just me. Mm. But anyway, how are we saying goodbye to Yaz without, I mean, you've seen how companions leave.
Yeah.
Die, memory loss.
Divorce, beheaded. Yeah.
How can she leave the Doctor?
I think it has to be the Doctor very gently, as this particular Doctor would do, saying, this is not something I do, or this is not something I'm prepared to do, and Yaz making the choice to walk away, almost like Martha.
Because I think the not that that can't be done, but I think the Yaz we've seen for, if not the whole series, at least the past year and a half, is the obsessed Yaz, which I'm not saying is neither bad nor good, but like when the Doctor was put in prison, you had, you know, the next episode, Yaz is like stuck in the other TARDIS with all her notes and all that. Mm. And so the obsessed, either in a good or or unhealthy way. I'll let others characterize. I mean, it's going to take a lot. You know, it's almost like the 13th Doctor says that and, you know, disappears and regenerates, and Yaz is on the mission, you know, in Big Finish for the next 10 years trying to find the Doctor. Yeah. Like, you're like Captain Jack or something. We'll get the Yaz.
Well, and maybe this is where Graham comes in.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of, nope. Time to go back to the
live your life.
Police station. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think also, I mean, you've got the issue, and we don't obviously know this, is that Chibnall's going to have to wrap it up to a point where Russell T. Davis will need to pick it up from. And that won't necessarily be, you know, a big definitive sort of point. But, you know, they will have swapped notes to an extent of, like, where do you want the Doctor to be? You know, what situation do you need to begin your series with? So there's going to be that discussion. And I think most likely, you know, we're going to need the new era is going to need the Doctor, you know, separate in the same way that Tennant finished, you know, the Russell T. Davis era finished before, so that then the Moffat era could come in and start anew. So we're going to need some resolution to all of that. You know, sorry.
How will the TARDIS explode?
And will anyone know how to fly it?
Yeah, I mean, 10 to 11 and 12 to 13, we have to explode the TARDIS somehow.
So because of that, we're going to need Yaz to leave the Doctor prior to her death. So does that mean we're going to have some sort of extended death? Or are they? You never know. Are they going to completely surprise us and actually not have her die at the end and for her to be in the special? I mean, I don't think that's likely. She might, but, you know, we don't know for sure. We don't know for certain. And we're used now to celebrities on interviews saying, I'm done, I'm for the same one thing. And then, yeah. I mean, the guy who played, Andrew Garfield for about a year before had to go to the, I'm not in. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, but I think the cat's out of the bag now. So you never know. I mean, if they're not filming, I mean, some people might say, well, Jodie Whittaker's obviously pregnant, and so she wouldn't be able to film. But as far as I know, they haven't filmed anything yet. And she, you know, she certainly hasn't got anything on the cards. I mean, when we saw her at the convention, she said someone asked her at the evening thing, her and Mandip Gill were doing a talk together, and they say, you know, what's next? And she's like, well, I'm going to be busy for a little while, referring obviously to the fact that she's going to give birth. But you never know, you know, there might be some little cameo. Who knows? We just don't know how it's going to go down. So, yeah, it's going to be obviously particularly interesting, because I think when it came to the end of the Tennant era, or the end of the Russell T. Davis era, and as well going into the final for the end of the Moffat era, we kind of knew where it was going. You know, we knew that the 10th Doctor was going to have some big showdown with the Master and the Four Knocks, and that he would end up on his own because he didn't have a companion in those specials leading up. We knew that Capaldi, well, he was already dying by before he got to his finale, you know. And I know some people would rather he have died and regenerated in the actual world enough in time before he got to Twice Upon a Time. But we kind of, going into the finale, I don't think there's ever been less information or less certainty about how is this going to go down. You know, we know that they're all going to have to leave, but how is that going to happen? I mean, some people, as always, say, well, Yaz is going to die, but that very, very rarely ever happens with a companion. Not in a family program to kill off the companion. I mean they tried, you know, Adric is as close as this got, and despite never really liking Adric when I was growing up, I've since realized that a lot of people were really shocked when they killed him off. And I just don't think they would do that, not with Yaz. I don't think they'll kill her off. So she has to leave. So she has to leave before the Doctor is so fatally injured that there's no coming back.
Maybe yeah. She'll go to
parallel universe.
Well, a parallel universe, or I was thinking off with Amy and Rory in the
time locked
in the time lock. Yeah,
possibly. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I know that we're talking. I could see that that's the storyline where Yaz has to make a decision about, you know, in order to save whatever the people, the world, the galaxy, she has to either, you know, leave the Doctor forever by pressing this button or going to this universe or being stuck in this time. Versus knowing that she has to do that, so where Yaz makes the sacrifice and gets stuck away from the Doctor, whatever that means, or sending the Doctor or something.
And there could be some misdirection as well, because people are saying that obviously in the trailer you've got a lot of little moments to grab your attention, but they can be misleading. Like, for example, you appear to see the Doctor regenerating and saying Yaz, but if you look at the effect, it looks more like perhaps she's opened that mysterious fob watch that she shouldn't, or maybe been forced to.
I forgot about that.
Some people are saying whether the Master is there and he's saying this is the day you die. He might not be saying that to the Doctor, but rather to Yaz, perhaps, and that the Doctor chooses perhaps to sacrifice herself to save Yaz in some way, make some sort of choice. A bit like how Tennant had to put Rose in the parallel, sort of make her go to the parallel universe. And even so, she came back and got sucked through, that his intent was that he had to, you know, make a choice in a way in order to save her or save himself. And of course, with Wilf, though I still think he could have been slightly more humble in that moment. People always, that's the one comment, the one Chris I always get in my video. Nah, his death, that's perfectly in character. And it's like, I don't know, I just find it difficult that the Doctor has a tantrum like a teenage boy. And I know it makes sense from the point of view of a character, of, you know, when you're writing character, but I just find it a bit difficult that the Doctor, having previously sacrificed himself so quite willingly for people like Perry and others, that he then has a big temper tantrum and sort of rubs his face and goes, yeah, now all right then. So I hope Whittaker's is a little bit more, she doesn't have such a trouble making the decision in a way.
Yeah.
I don't think she's as vain an incarnation.
So Jessica, how do you, I mean, I'm not telling you to write an episode, but in that last 5 minutes, how does Jodie say goodbye to her character? How do you want the 13th Doctor to say goodbye?
I don't know is the short answer.
He always gets that nice monologue, which I know some people think is overindulgent. I always like it. I mean, if it's done well.
Yeah, no, and I think Jodie can
monologue
the hell out of it.
Giving guidance to her next Doctor.
I think she's ready. I think this Doctor is ready to move. In the same way that Jodie's always been up, or that Doctor has always been up for the next adventure, I think that's the way this Doctor will see the regeneration. So I think it'll almost be a flip of Peter Capaldi's Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Of, yep, let's do it.
Yeah, and I guess, and I mean, this is always going to be, well, for me, the complaint about this era. I almost feel like I don't know this Doctor that well. I mean, God bless whenever she wants to do Big Finish, because I feel like I'll learn a whole lot more. But like, especially in these recent episodes, it's all been about her finding herself. Who am I as the Doctor? You know, the Fob Watch and the past Doctors and you know, love it or don't love it. It is what it is, I guess. But like, that's what her quest has been, you know. But then it's been, so who am I? I don't know who she is. And you're not going to tell me in 90 minutes, I don't think. And so it's a little sadness to me that this is the Doctor I never knew. I mean, I've enjoyed her.
I think it's something that is going to be interesting in a way to sort of look back on as an era. Which obviously I plan to do at some point, and to see how it sort of developed and how it's organically evolved. Because I think, you know, there is a through line in the series about identity and, you know, who are you, where do you come from, what decides that. I think a lot of people seem to forget, in all the fireworks, real and imagined, of the Timeless Children, the actual story, that is the episode, is that the Doctor does come to a conclusion of, you know, the Master is essentially, it's almost meta, because the Master is someone who can't deal with the fact that the Doctor is more than what he thought they were, and that he owes in some way his existence to that, and he's stuck in the you've got to destroy the past and rip it all down and destroy it's a lie, and you don't know who you are. And she does come to somewhat of a conclusion, which is, it doesn't matter who I was, where I come from, it's who I am and what I do in the present. So she's very much a Doctor Who, and we've got that kind of underlined in Legend of the Sea Devils, where she wants to live in the present. You know, and I think you can look at that and analyze it for different aspects. Is that a strength of hers? Is it a weakness? Is she running away from confronting things? You know, she's obviously fearful of where she's headed because of how time told her that, you know, you're going to end soon. She knows this is going to happen, which is what's kind of holding her back from making a kind of commitment to Yaz. But she's very much an in the present Doctor, whereas her previous incarnation was very much a kind of a, he also had that, who am I? Am I a good man kind of argument? And he also had a bit of an identity crisis to some extent. He thought he was one way, then he very strangely becomes a very different way, and then he settles down into a kind of, seems more comfortable in his last season, where he's with who he is and how he presents himself. And but it's not necessarily been as explicit, I think, as some people expect. And I think looking back at it, and with the finale coming up, I think there'll be things that perhaps we haven't picked up on as obviously in certain episodes that kind of work together. I'm not saying necessarily that Chris Chibnall is a genius, he sat down and planned everything out, but I think there has been a bit of an organic development of her seeking who she is. And I think her conclusion in a way is that, well, she's the Doctor at the end of the day. You know, she is that she's not someone who needs to go away and kind of brood on things. She's a force of nature in a way that acts, and it's not about debate and analysis and things like that. It's who you are, what you choose to do, the actions, the consequences of those actions in the present rather than the past and even the future. So in that way, I think she's similar to Davison's Doctor, in that the Fifth Doctor was someone who was a little bit irritated by things going on, but he was someone who was always in the moment and acting, and he didn't have the big schemes and plans that, say, the Seventh Doctor had later. He always is hanging on by his fingertips, and like, if he doesn't at the last minute jury rig something, it's all going to fall apart. And, you know, there's that kind of breathless kind of anxiety to his, and I think the Whittaker Doctor has kind of become very similar to that. And I think you could argue in a way that the Fifth Doctor seems a bit superficial in a way, and he also had a big TARDIS crew team. So, you know, I think consciously or otherwise, Chibnall has kind of channeled that version of Doctor Who into, you could argue that the Russell T. Davison Moffat era kind of in some way reminiscent of sort of 70s Doctor Who, and I think Chibnall's era has been reminiscent of 80s Doctor Who in that regard. And I think with having a Doctor Who is very talking about their feelings and analytical of these things and relationships, we've kind of come to expect that because of those the previous eras. But actually, Whittaker is very similar to some of the earlier Doctors, who perhaps are a little bit more superficial. I mean, Tom Baker once said it's a difficult part to play because the character doesn't develop. It doesn't, you know, and everyone sees Baker as the definitive Doctor all the time, you know, next to Tennant. And it's interesting to see that. Obviously, things have changed somewhat in Doctor Who, but also in television since the 1970s, obviously. But he once famously said that it's not an acting part, not only because he was playing himself, you know, but because he said the character doesn't develop. It doesn't have relationships, romantic relationships. So he doesn't see it as a normal role. He is... in a way, could be a two-dimensional character. Now, a lot of people don't like that, but I think that in a way, the 13th Doctor era has been, in a way, truer to that kind of impression of the interpretation of the Doctor than perhaps the way that Davis and Moffat developed the character. And whether that's the right thing to do or not is another debate, but I think that's part of it. So I think, in a way, the special, the finale, won't necessarily be a big soul-searching thing. It might be just a conclusion of, like you say, it might be, I can't lose you and I want you to be happy. And they share a kiss and Yaz chooses probably the benefit of having Ace and Tegan, former companions who left the Doctor and then went on in their respective lives to... And we know with Ace that she, you know, developed this charity. She's, mm-hmm. you know, changed the world and all this kind of thing. And earlier with Joe, I think that those characters will probably be the ones, rather than, say, Graham, to reinforce that, you know, you need to make a choice to move on. You can't keep running and being in the present, because the Doctor is someone who is always there and always on, and humans need to... you know, retire at some point, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that reminds, I didn't think about that, which is obvious when you say it, but like you think about school reunion with Sarah Jane sort of giving Rose the talk. And even in the Sarah Jane episode, the funeral, the Doctor's funeral, death of the Doctor, when you have
Joe,
it kind of a reverse way, but the 11th Doctor explaining to Joe, or giving that moment about, you know, their relationship, you know, you were going to come back, blah, blah, blah. And even to the extent that Joe and Sarah talk to each other. So I didn't even think about, of course, with Tegan and Ace.
Well, and Sarah Jane was very much the next lady, so to speak, for him, you know. It was so, yeah. And Joe was the one who made the decision to leave. Sarah Jane had that unfinished business because she was sort of unceremoniously dumped somewhere and then didn't see the Doctor for years. You've got different viewpoints. Tegan made the choice to leave in quite a downbeat way. You know, it stopped being fun. So maybe that's something that you all want to pick up. Right.
The end of the 7th Doctor and Ace relationship.
I mean, people are arguing like, well, what about the canon? What about Big Finish? Like, there's any kind of fixed canon with Doctor Who, really. Because there are stories of what happens to Tegan. There is a mention in that Sarah Jane episode story, because there's that part about how the companions have all gone on to change the world and do different things. And there's a mention of Tegan and Nyssa, who are a couple living in Australia, I believe. So whether they'll touch on that or not, I don't know. But when they're saying on the Zoom call or whatever it is, or phone call that they were doing, and she's saying, I haven't seen the Doctor in 40 years, and for me it's been 30 kind of thing, three decades, something like that. That therefore wipes out other subsequent thing. Because, I mean, Sophie Aldred herself wrote a novel where she is that Ace, a charitable earth, where she meets the 13th Doctor and Dan and Yaz and Graham, and it was good fun. But is that now parallel? Probably. Doesn't really matter.
No.
You know, you don't want to bog things down. But because that did provide sort of an ending of it was a flashback in that book where that explained how Ace left the Doctor. But Ace has left the Doctor about five or six different times in different media, so you can pick and choose which one you prefer. There's one where she dies, there's one where she becomes a Time Lord, there's one where she sort of zooms about on a motorbike that travels through time and has another canine with her. So there's all various, because it was the wilderness ears, there was it was kind of free reign for everyone to come up with different ways of developing the story. So
fan fiction everywhere.
Well, speaking of mucking things up, and we're gonna close here, but are we gonna see the Fugitive Doctor in this last special, and are we ever going to see her afterwards?
God, I hope so. Oh, I hope so. I can't believe that we're just going to leave her hanging.
Richard?
I think it's very likely that we'll see her in the special, whether that will be her in person or as some sort of Matrix avatar like she was in The Timeless Children. I think the latter's probably more likely. Or, you know, like when she opens the watch, does she have previous incarnations you know, speak to her about things, come to some sort of resolution. I think it's unlikely that we'll see that character in the new era, only because I can see that being, you don't tend to have those kind of callback. You might have the old continuity callback reference.
Is she the new Captain Jack, since we can't, you know, use him anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we see Rose appear in the TARDIS in Matt Smith's time as a hologram, and he's like, oh, you make me feel guilty. But I don't think that we'll have that story will necessarily be picked up and run with. I think it was interesting in a Doctor Who magazine recently where they did ask him, Chibnall, this is about, where does she fit? And he's like, wherever you want her to, which I found interesting. I know people want definitive, but I like what he's saying there, because, you know, you can take the story and make it what you will. I mean, if you want it to be, like I personally like the idea of her being in between Troughton and Pertwee as a kind of secret incarnation that was working for the CIA they were called the Celestial Intervention Agency. I imagine the reason why they call them the Division now is because that joke that Robert Holmes made, CIA, is probably a bit too on the nose these days.
Yeah.
A bit like how UNIT is not allowed to be called the United Nations Intelligence Task Force anymore. It has to be called the Unified Intelligence Task Force. But yeah, I like that. But, you know, some people say, well, she could have been before Hartnell. And, that it's a coincidence that the TARDIS looks like a police box and things like that. Obviously, the big announcement came out that both her and Sacha Dhawan's Master are going to have box set spin-offs of a Big Finish. So that'll be interesting to see how they develop that and use her character. I think, in a way, the fact that those two box sets have been announced is proof positive, really, that we're not going to have
either
of those incarnations show up past the Whittaker era, which I think is a shame. There's some really great stories there, but I can understand, at least from the Fugitive Doctor point of view, of why they wouldn't want to. They're expecting, and I think they'll get an influx of new viewers, and that's why I think it's going to be a soft reboot, and they're not going to have, you know, you're getting used to the character of the Doctor again. You're not going to necessarily have, you know, this random mysterious other incarnation show up, at least not for the foreseeable future, maybe down the line. Hopefully this finale will in some way resolve some of the unanswered questions. Not entirely. I mean, based on Chibnall saying you can fit it in wherever you want, we're all obviously not going to get a definitive answer to it, but I think there's going to be some resolution of that arc, if you want, of, you know, what the Doctor was before the Timeless Child sort of thing, I think is going to be wrapped up in some respect. You know, there's going to be a decision at least made, which is, I think, it doesn't matter, let's move on kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the point, which I know a lot of people can't really deal with. They want it all fixed and set in stone, but that's not Doctor Who really, is it?
No.
I think it'll be a great shame that Sacha Dhawan won't carry on as the Master, because I'd really love to see more of him. I think he's been a really good Master. Obviously, he's going to be in this special. But I think it would be good to have a Master run over different incarnations, like the old days a little bit, you know, with Anthony Ainley.
Maybe a little less.
You know, it was great seeing John Sim come back for the Capaldi story. You know, I think it would be good to have Sacha Dhawan continue as a Master. But maybe not.
So how do you want to say goodbye to the 13th Doctor?
Don't know. So long. Farewell. I'm sad because I would have loved to have seen what she could do under a different writer. But I'm not really excited. No, it's not how it works. And I'm really excited about the next one. So roll on, 14.
And your goodbye to the 13th Doctor, Richard.
I think that Doctor Who is one of those things where you never really say goodbye to any of them. Even the ones who in the real world pass on, we've never really, and they're always present. I mean, having grown up in the Wilderness era, my Doctor was all the Doctors to some extent. I've said before, you know, I watched Hartnell and then I changed the tape over and I'd watched Davison and McCoy. So in a way, the Doctor's always kind of eternal in a way. And I think that's going to be the same with Jodie Whittaker. And she's such a lovely person and a great ambassador for the show. She's someone who's always been proud of her association with it. I mean, I don't know if you've seen times where she's been interviewed, because she's a bit of a geek herself, you know. She gets it. She's not like a uber fan necessarily of things, but she gets that thing. And she was so, the reception that she had at the convention in London was so rapturous and so positive that I don't think the 13th Doctor's not finished, really. I think we're going to see her again in other ways, and that character is going to live on. And as you say, hopefully with the breathing room of without the restrictions of budget and time and all that, we're going to have her character develop further and fill in some of those gaps a little bit. So, you know, I'll miss having a female doctor. I found that really interesting and really inspiring for me as well. I mean, it's a thing that in my first video that I made years ago, now before the female doctor was cast, I was sort of, you know, I wasn't sure whether it would be the right thing to do to cast a woman doctor, because I felt that a male role model that wasn't the stereotypical, you know, muscle-bound character that I'd grown up with was important to me. But on reflection, I think I was making the mistake in some way of seeing things as gender polarized, that when I was younger, I wouldn't necessarily have seen a female lead as a role model as such. So, 'cause that's the point, isn't just about, obviously, importantly, having a female doctor is a good empowering role model for young girls and women, but I think also is an empowering role model for boys. And, you know, gender doesn't work quite the same way as perhaps we were brought up to believe in some way as well. So, you know, it's a shame in some way that, you know, we can't keep maintaining that, because I think I don't think many production studios would have maybe taken that step with something that was so clearly, you know, bringing in money and being that way. It was, you know, they get risk averse, don't they? So I think it was a great choice and a great achievement. And I've really enjoyed her incarnation. And I'm not really ready to say goodbye to her, but it's okay, because time is relative and you can always put her back on again and read more, you know.
Yep.
And we look forward to everyone not liking her being their new favorite doctor a year from now.
Yeah,
exactly. And of course, I'm looking forward to this young new whippersnapper to show me that age is but a number.
Well, thank you, Richard. And so for everyone else, enjoy the final weeks and months and days of the 13th Doctor era, and revisiting what she brought us and the special that is to come, and then look forward to the 14th Doctor next year. Until all of that, continue enjoying the adventures of the Doctor throughout time and space.
This is BBC Television.